Okay, as I was saying, we record these, and we also have post-session notes that add on to our conversation today, so people who are not able to join for whatever reason can catch up on notes and get some of the reference materials. We always start off with news from Washington, which Glow will give us an update on what's going on, and then we'll introduce Lewis and Clark County in just a second. So, Glow, what's new?
Actually, when I asked this morning if they had any new announcements for us to share today, they said nothing that I didn't already know. So I'm just going to tell you what I already know. The next round of grantees for the job training grants is still anticipated to take place in May sometime. I don't have a date other than that, just sometime in May. And they are still collecting stories. EPA is working with a contractor to put together a publication to distribute at the National Brownfields Conference to be held, I believe it's September 2nd through 4th in Chicago, success stories from the grantees, and they're going to distribute that publication at the national conference. So if you have any success stories to share, Joe would like you to send those directly to him, and his email address is bruss.joseph, J-O-S-E-P-H, at epa.gov, Joe Bruss. He's actually our project officer for the grant that we have with EPA. And then the last thing would be just if you have not already registered for the national conference, get registered as soon as you can, because I think that the prices go up April 1st. I think that's when the early bird registration prices end. So try to get registered before then.
Now, Glow is in the process, though, of setting up a webinar. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the webinar coming up?
Sure. With grantee feedback, they decided, the grantees wanted to have some kind of a mid-year update. And so we are going to do that through a webinar on April 20th at 1 p.m. Central Daylight Time. And it's going to be from 1 to 2 p.m. We're going to be having a couple people from EPA. Joe Bruss is one of them. Ann Carroll from the is Ann Carroll from the Superfund Department, Mike? I don't remember.
I believe she
which
is.
Which department? Okay. And then some updates from grantees. There's going to be three grantees that are all going to talk on their perspective of job placement. One from big city, one from mid-sized city, and one from rural. So that is on Monday, April 20th at 1 p.m. Central Daylight Time.
It's important to know that all PLC members are also eligible to come to the annual All Grantee Meeting, which is a meeting of all current and past grantees. We hold that in August. That's going to be Glow in mid-August.
August 19th and 20th.
And everyone, even though you don't have a grant, if you're on the PLC, you're invited to that. And EPA, through our grant, will pick up three nights of lodging. And we don't pick up meals, but we do have meals during the sessions. And we have some great breakout sessions. All of the EPA staff are there. The purpose of that meeting is basically to go face-to-face with each other. We're organized by regions, and we have some group sessions where we talk about large issues with EPA people, and then we break out into small group discussions where we talk about many of the components of developing a job training program, and we exchange ideas and strategies and do one-to-one conversations, and that's a great conference for everyone to go to. Yes, who joined?
Marie Heath, Edward Waters College.
Okay, great. Marie, we were just talking about two things before we talked to Lewis and Clark. This is about the All Grantee Meeting that we have in August, and it's a chance to, you have to get your own way, you pay your own transportation to get there. But once you're there, the costs are minimal because we have snacks and we have one working lunch. You might have just to cover one or two meals and some incidentals besides your transportation. But it's a chance to meet with all your regional people from all over the country, with EPA staff, and to see all the grantees. We get about 99% of the grantees. It's mandatory in their RFP to budget for this meeting. So you'll be able to sit down with current grantees and alumni. We've had people who have been coming for 10 years who have had grants and have no longer have grants, and they still come to this meeting. So it's a great opportunity for communities, if you attend the PLC, to attend this and mingle and talk to people who have done it, who have been successful and who have had problems, the whole group. And also at that meeting, we kind of get to know each other, and people say, we want to do something mid-year. Well, we didn't have the resources. People didn't have an opportunity to travel, but we decided we'd do this webinar, and GLO is in the process of organizing this, and it'll be on the 20th, and it'll be a great opportunity, not as intensive as the annual grantee meeting, but an opportunity to hear from some EPA people and hear some experiences, kind of like an expanded PLC, but there'll be all presentations from EPA, and there'll be a chance to ask questions, and so it should be a good time. So you might put that on your calendar. Everyone's eligible to come that's on these calls to just listen in, and it'll be, GLO, we're using Adobe Connect, and are you going to have also a landline, correct?
I think so. We are still trying to decide that right now, but it will be Adobe Connect, and I will put that link and announcement out on the listserv.
And we'll,
so it'll be available to everyone. And I'll put something in there, too, if there's a phone line.
Okay, and we'll also...
What was the date again?
April 20th. On a Monday.
And that's, she said Central Time. I'm on Eastern Time. It's 1 to 2 Central, 2 to 3 Eastern. What is it, Mountain Time? 12 to 1. So mark it on your calendars. We're going to send you links both to anyone on the PLC list and everyone on the listserv. Those are two different lists. The listserv is a larger group. The PLC group, we have about 250 people on these every other week conference calls. If you're not getting post-session notes from me, just drop me your contact information, and that would be to msenyu@aol.com, and I'll spell that M, which is like Michael, S-E-N-E-W, and that's like S, like in Sam, E-N, as in Nancy, E-W, @AOL.com. And we'll make sure you're on the PLC note list, which are often just a little more comprehensive sometimes than we get into discussion. Also has the announcements like Good Job, Green Jobs coming up April 13th. I'll put these dates in the post-session notes, and the annual grantee meeting on 19th and 20th, and of course the 2015 Brownfields Training Conference on September 2nd through the 4th, where everyone that has anything to do with Brownfields goes to that, and that'll be in Chicago. So with that, getting those announcements out of the way, we want to talk about rural brownfields. As I said earlier, we have talked to Detroit and Flint. These represent more urban industrial communities. Detroit struggled that first year. They had a difficult time. They, by chance, went to a meeting and found people in the deconstruction business. They were working with city people. And as they got to know the contractors, they said, we'll take everyone you can graduate. And before that, they were kind of struggling with placing. And after a while, these contractors, because there was a city mandate to hire locally, they were interested. They got to know the program. And it was certainly a serendipity meeting, city meeting that they were invited to go to. All the contractors came to them, and as a result, they had to revamped their whole training schedule. Instead of having one cycle that they were going to have this fall, they have to fit three training cycles of 20 before this next spring, before the construction season starts. And this will be lead and asbestos removal people with certifications, and they're looking at 100% replacement. Just by the serendipity meeting that they were invited to, it was a city council meeting or city hall sponsored meeting, they would have not normally gone to. That's one example in Detroit, but a heavily urban area with lots of deconstruction and rebuilding. The other grantee we talked to was in Flint, Michigan, which is also having a difficult first year, but they're going to make it work. They learn an awful lot of things that first year, and they had a change in personnel. They no sooner got the grant than the person at the community college that organized this whole thing and had the background left, and a new staff member who knew nothing about brownfields and environmental workforce development training was selected to take the job. He was very competent, but wasn't at all familiar with the program. So he went to the annual grantee meeting one year, and everything we said kind of went over his head because he just wasn't familiar. But as he got back to home base, he started talking to his staff and organizing his staff, and things started to click with him that he learned at the all grantee meeting. The second year, he said it really kicked in, and he learned all of the things that were unfamiliar at first. He started learning these strategies, a tryout strategy for recruiting and different ideas, and he totally revamped his program and now feels really confident to move forward and on the second cycle that he's doing. So, but these were urban areas, and I was very interested in hearing about a first-year grantee in a more rural. Helena is certainly not in the middle of nowhere, but it's certainly not Detroit or even Flint, and not the heavy industrialization. So I was really happy when Laura and Jennifer were very eager to talk about their program, and that's fantastic. The only question I have, and it's been in my mind ever since I started thinking, I'd really like to listen to about Lewis and Clark, is why did they name it Lewis and Clark County? And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Laura and Jennifer. Do you know?
Well, we'll start out with that question first. Then, as far as I know, Lewis and Clark County comes through the fact that Lewis and Clark traveled through here, and there's many campsites along the Missouri River. That's just about 10 miles east of us.
I thought that was it. I wasn't sure. I know they didn't end up there. They kept
going. No, they traveled through here on their way to the Pacific and on their way back. And I think they spent some quality time in the area. So we have a lot of historically named landmarks with Lewis and Clark or reference to them as well.
Neat. Very neat.
Yeah, we definitely, Helena's, we have approximately 40,000 people in our area, but Montana as a whole is, very rural. We only have approximately 7 people per square miles. There's a little less than 1 million people in 147,000 square miles. We're kind of a big city spread out across a lot of dirt. However, in that dirt, there is a lot of surface contaminants due to very prolific mining history in the late 1800s, early 1900s, all the way up until current. Because of that, we have 16 Superfund sites on the national priorities list, as well as one of the largest Superfund complexes just 60 miles south of us that has 3 mega Superfund sites in that area. Again, primarily the contaminants are from mining. So once we were granted and then we started looking at our curriculum, we took into account, what contaminants we're going to find at these Superfund sites, along with a number of state Superfund sites as well. And we also looked to construction companies and abatement companies. You know, there's a lot of environmental, but there's also, you know, we have a lot of older buildings that contain asbestos and lead as well. So between those two, we have started to develop our curriculum, which is coursework will be through the Helena College, which is a local two-year college that we have here in town. Currently, we're looking at doing, of course, the HAZWOPR, the lead RRP. We're also going to do the asbestos contractor supervisor. Those are kind of our main, definitely core classes. From there, we move on to like OSHA construction, confined spaces with a lot of safety involved, you know, smaller hour, two-hour classes with that as well, medical first aid, and then life skills, which we've partnered with two different partners here in Helena. One is our local job service office, and the other one is our Career Training Institute, and they have both offered up to help us with the life skills or soft skills classes. So that's kind of where we are right now. We are planning to start classes in early fall with a tract here in Helena. I also mentioned the mega Superfund sites to the south of us, which there's a town down there, Anaconda, Montana. We also plan on running a tract with them, so there'll be two separate courses, one held here in Helena and then one held down in Anaconda. And that's kind of where we are right now.
That's great. The do you think that the recruitment, how do you feel about recruitment? And do you, that one of the things we found that with the other first-year grantees is nobody knows about your program, and getting that word out and hitting the groups that you're trying to get. Are you working, is the Labor Department going to refer people to you, or do you feel you need to go out and market? How are you going to approach that?
You know, we this is our next big hurdle. We have our curriculum in place, we have our instructors laid out, but now definitely the recruitment's our next big step. Mm-hmm. Currently our partners on that are, again, the Montana Job Service, and which has an office locally here, and then also our Career Training Institute, which takes people and helps them, you know, get the training to make them more employable. We also have our Workforce Investment Board here that we're working with, and Adult Learning Center as well. So with a combination of that and with some marketing, maybe some radio advertisement, and definitely social media.
Mm-hmm. That's more and more people using the social media to get the word out, and we're finding Facebook pages and Twitter feeds, and everyone's trying different things. The great thing that you're doing is working through that Workforce Investment Board. Some states are very active, and the Workforce Investment Boards are really helpful places. In probably the thing that comes to my mind is out in Tacoma, where they've got people, the Workforce Investment Board and the city and the grantee, the college, is they're working in tandem, and everyone that comes through the program, they check to see what kind of benefits they can get. And they often will get boots, they'll get learning materials, anything that could help them in the job that they're eventually going to be doing. And so they routinely screen everyone that comes in to see if they can qualify. And often people don't realize that those benefits are there. Now, not every state has such a generous and investment board. Some are more to themselves, and it's harder to draw them into these programs. But you may be fortunate, and it's certainly worth looking at. But it sounds like you've got several sources of people coming into your community, and particularly in rural areas, getting that word out is you're talking about an entire state, aren't you, trying to get people in?
Yeah, just based on our low population. Helena is unique in the fact that we are the state capital, so we're also working closely with the Department of Labor, which they hold a safety fest throughout the state in other places, but, you know, they've been able to connect us with different instructors, and they're, like our OSHA, they're able to do that as an in-kind donation. So we're lucky in the fact that a lot of these state agency offices are within the same community that we're also trying to set up this program. So that's definitely great. Been a benefit.
Mm-hmm. That's great. One of our most rural grantees is Alaska, and the people in Alaska have to fly out, and they've actually had to bring people in for different cohorts. So they'll bring people in, put them up, and they get funding to put them up and stay there, do an intensive week or two, and then go back home and then come back again. And they find it, again, in those dispersed populations. Another one is Nye County in Nevada, where it probably more resembles the issues that you may face in terms of a small population over a broad area. And the issues there are the diversity of educational backgrounds, where because you don't have, you know, when you're in Detroit or Boston or Chicago or any of the urban areas, the word gets out and all of a sudden they've got the reverse problem. You've got 1,000 people for 25 positions that may go down to 20. And in the case of Nye County or even in Alaska, it's so rural that they're getting people, older people who want to develop a new career. You've got young people. They've got people who have not stood in a classroom for 15 or 20 years. And all of a sudden, you find yourself in a class with people that are very useful to social media. Some have never used a computer. Some are used to academic work, and some are not at all. They're all hands-on. So I expect that you're going to probably run into those kind of issues as well. What was your feeling when you first got that grant? How did you respond to that when you got the notice that, okay, you've got the money?
Hi, this is Laura. I guess Jennifer wasn't on board when we first got it. I think, in general excitement, and then I think one of the difficulties that we've had that wasn't mentioned is figuring out who the groups are that we need to bring together. You know, I didn't even know when I went to the conference last year, I didn't know what everybody there was saying, the WIBs. I had never heard of a WIB before. So it took us getting, you know, all these connections together with Job Service and Department of Labor and the Department of Environmental Quality and all that. And Jennifer's done a good job of finding out who all the players in our community are. We found out that a lot of resources exist, but really teaming has not been something that's happened so much, especially in environmental training. So for us in this community, it's very timely for some of the training that needs to happen. So we just, general excitement when we found out that we got it.
It's going to be exciting, and there's a certain amount of luck of going to a meeting and connecting with someone that you didn't know existed that is interested in the same things you are, and at the same time, their eyes light up and saying, really, are you doing this? And we'd like to get involved, you know, or we need to get involved. Because one thing that sometimes people don't realize with public agencies is everyone's trying to develop success stories, and you can both get on the same train and help each other, and you come out good, and they come out good. And it's to their benefit to partner with you and get into your program, because in their progress reports, they can also include the fact that they're working with you, and certainly you're working with them. And so everyone benefits, particularly the students, in terms of leveraging. So it really, in these early stages of your program, it's really helpful to try to reach out and get the word out as much as possible. And And I would, that first year, I would anticipate a lot of landmines and struggles that everyone that we've talked to that first year is, I don't mean to be a grunge, but it's always a difficult time. But that, then that they really bloom after that first year because the word gets out and all of a sudden the people who graduate go back and they go to work for these companies and the company says, send me more of them. I need more of them. And then, of course, the people who get the jobs, they go out to their friends and say, this is a killer program. This is great. And we found that in these other programs, even the urban areas, that while it was hard to recruit the first year, the second year, this was particularly, it was a second-year grantee. He said, we really struggled getting participants the first year because they didn't know the jobs. They didn't know what we did. But then that second year, we just had to start filtering because it was difficult. Have you set up any criteria on who you're going to be recruiting? Or are you, at this point, do you feel that you can't really be too selective? Have you thought about how you're going to approach that?
We definitely have our criteria to be able to be a participant in the program. We also, like I said, are working closely with adult learning centers, job services, career training institutes, and those agencies even said at this point, as soon as we get our exact date that we're going to start classes, that, they may even have people in mind that they are going to, because a GED is a requirement to be able to be a participant, but, if they have enough time ahead, they can, start working with somebody maybe now, have them ready come, August, September to actually be a trainee in our program. So working closely with them, I think, is going to be a huge asset for us here.
Anyone on the call that can give some advice to Laura on this first year? Or your experiences that first year? Memphis has gone through ups and downs too, haven't you?
This is Dana, actually the new job training manager for the second EPA grant. And Ann Terry was the project manager for the first one, which I'm sure she'll definitely be able to share some great stories, just more in-depth details regarding that process. And I'm actually in the process now. Ann is definitely still very, very hands-on with us here. But I know some things that we started to do differently versus in the past with recruitment. We've reached out to, there's a local career college here, Vaterod, and they have a lot of alumni that have not been placed. And so they have that HVAC background, building maintenance background. And so we partnered with them and to actually enroll them in our job training to get them some further, skills. And then we'll be able to, they already understand the EPA regulations. They are familiar with lead, mold, and asbestos. And so seem to be potential fits for our program. So we've met with them and spoke to their students and had at least one so far this week to show up to information session and interested in the program. So we're definitely trying some different ways to partner, and that will also help Vaterod as well with their placement goals. So just trying to leverage where we could go and target and just have different avenues of recruiting.
Mm-hmm. You brought up some really good points there. We found that in that recruitment, construction and environmental training go hand in hand.
Yes.
And a lot of those jobs are, they're construction people, but there's lead on the site. And Laura, you nailed it, I think, in your needs assessment. You've got lead and you've got asbestos. And you've got lead in mines and you've got asbestos in deconstruction. But those are construction trades. But when the employers are looking for someone, they've got someone to work in the field, but they don't have those backgrounds.
And yeah. Yeah.
So your students will have a background that no one else will have, and you're giving them probably $5,000 to $8,000 worth of certification by the time you finish with 1910-120, and particularly RRP. It's a tremendous RRP is very important, particularly in older communities. And you know, Helena, as you said, has a lot of old buildings, and you bet anything before about in mid-70s, they use lead-based paints, and definitely something there. And you've got that mining industry, which is got all kinds of issues and can work really well in terms of that. So, and the other thing I think that was pointed out was don't be afraid to change your program. Flint basically didn't throw out their old program, but totally reoriented. And after talking to other grantees, and hopefully you'll be at the next grantee meeting this August, they completely changed their program. They took a different approach, and they, you know, it took them that first year to do that. And it's good to keep your regional rep, and it sounds like you're close to your regional rep. Keep them in touch, what you're doing, how things are going, the pluses and minuses. We're this one nice thing about this program is we just trying all to help each other. And fortunately, the EPA people recognize the difficulties of these programs. And I think Montana, Alaska, Nevada, these are our toughest programs. It's a slam dunk when you're in Chicago or Boston or New York, or even some of the communities in Florida to put out a notice and you've got tons of people. But you're struggling on both sides, both on the recruitment side and then also even on the training and in the placement side. So you're the people that we really want to try to nurture. And I would say anything that any of the grantees can do. Is it okay if I put your contact information in the post-session notes?
Oh, yes, definitely.
That'd be all right with you? Anyone who may want to touch base with you or share any experiences with you, it would be great. It would be great. Well, we try to keep these down to 30 minutes, and I really appreciate both of you for talking about this program. It's going to be interesting, and I hope anything we can do to help you, Laura and Jennifer, we really hope we can work with you.
We'll take you up on that offer.
Great. Well, we'll keep you posted.
Okay, keep us posted, and come on to the webinar, which we'll be getting more information on, and we'll see you all in August. And then, of course, on PLCs, we're going to have the next PLC April 2nd. So we've got two more in this series, and then we'll take a little bit of a break. So come and join us, and we wish you the best of luck on your new program.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Okay. Thank you, everyone. And we'll see
you on
April 2nd. Have a good day.
Thank you.